Welcome to the Beyond Jiu-Jitsu podcast. This is episode 140. Ask a Black Belt Q&A number 10, 11, something like that.
Whatever it is. Oh my God, 140, Kieran. What is up?
We made it.
Oh my God, we made it.
If you're new to the podcast, which I know some of you are, every 10 episodes we do a Ask a Black Belt / Ask a Loser. Blue belt Q&A. I don't know where that was going. So you can submit your questions to the show. You can find a link in the description of this episode. It's on our Instagram bio if you have us on Instagram, and you can submit your audio questions. We'll answer them live on air, and you'll be able to hear our beautiful voices combined with your beautiful voice in a
it'll be so sensual.
Yeah. Kieran, before
what is it? Yeah. Right, whoop, up. Whoop, whoop, guys, for those
before
who don't
we get
know,
into oh yep.
I was just about to say, for those who aren't super up to date with the episodes, Kieran's in Sweden. I'm still in Australia. So we definitely have a little bit of that lag and talk over each other a little bit, as you just saw. Which was what I was in the process of mentioning as we started to speak over the top of each other. But yeah, go on. Back to you, Kieran.
Back. Thanks, Adam. I just wanted to give a bit of a plug, a bit of a shameless self-promoting plug to subscribe to our YouTube channel. We need a couple hundred more subscribers, and we are in that Goldilocks zone of being monetized on YouTube. Yay. Which, I mean, it doesn't really mean too much for you guys, but it would mean the world to us if you could give us a subscribe.
Yeah, thumbs up.
Like this video. Subscribe to my channel. New videos every week.
Yeah.
With that all said and done.
Hang on, wait. I don't want to jump straight into the questions.
Whoa.
Just yet. Whoa. So, of course, it's a Jiu-Jitsu podcast. We're not here just to do a you guys to eavesdrop on a Adam and Kieran catch up. But leading up to Kieran moving to Sweden, which if you don't know why, we've gone over it in multiple episodes in the past, but we said, it'll be interesting because, you know, Kieran and I communicate quite frequently through WhatsApp, but you know, don't get the chance to, we're not on the mats together every day. We're not training, rolling together. So when we recorded last week, you were just, I mean, you'd been in Sweden for about a week, but you were kind of settling in. You were in Stockholm at first, and then, but now you're a couple hours north of Stockholm. And so you hadn't yet been to train, right? Which, of course, for anyone who has moved countries knows it's a lot of shit you have to do.
Yeah.
But you've since been to train. And I remember when we recorded last week, I said, you better have gone to train by the time we record next week, which is now. So, without us doing a 20-minute derail, because we've got a few questions to get to today, you've gone to train. There were two gyms. Where we at?
Okay, so I went to train on Sunday. There was a 2-hour no-gi session at the gym that is furthest away from me. So,
like an open mat or a class?
I'm not sure if it was an open mat. I think it was a class. But anyway, so the way it works is there's two towns. This is like a country town, right, that I'm in right now, and the closest larger town is about 25 minutes drive from where I am now. The next closest large town is another like 20 minutes again, so it's about 45, nearly 50 minutes drive from where I am, and that's where the two gyms are located. The two gyms are kind of like connected. They're like sister gyms. You join one, you've joined both, right? So think of it as, you know, two satellite gyms as part of a larger network, if you will. And there was a no-gi session at the gym that's furthest away, happened to be the
one you've
gym.
Been to before when last
no.
time you were in Sweden.
Yeah, it's a closer one. Yeah.
Wait, though, sorry.
Yeah.
The gym that you had been
one that's
to
20 minutes away, one's 40 minutes away.
Yeah, yes. Which is the one that you had been to last time you were in Sweden.
The closer of the two.
Oh, okay. So this was also your first time going to this gym, this other gym.
Yeah, would have been, but it was on, I was meant to go on Sunday, and I got hit up. We mentioned in the last episode that there's a guy that listens to the podcast. It was like, hey, you're coming to Sweden. Where are you? And it turns out that I'll be training at his gym. This is his gym. This is the one he trains at. And shout out to Stuart. I spoke to him. Glad to shout him out. So
what's up, Stuart?
what's up? And he hits me up because I was talking to him about like, hey, what's going on? Because it's a public holiday and everything like that. And
we had a public holiday over here. What are the odds?
Yeah, it was like Swedish people will like cringe at this, but it was some sort of like bonfire day, whether it's like an ancient fucking pagan public holiday where the whole thing is they burn a big bonfire to scare away the evil spirits. Man, the pagans are weird, right? They still have all those weird Scandinavian traditions. It was the most underwhelming holiday I've ever done this. Dude, it was so lame. So long story short, I got told by my fiance, she was like, you can't go train. Like we got this big fucking big thing we got to go to. Like all the towns going in and standing around the bonfire and this and that. And I'm like, oh, okay. Right. So I just didn't rock up. I forgot to message Stuart. And he's like, where are you, bro? Are you coming? And then I'm like, oh, no, I got to do this bonfire thing. And he's like, oh, I'm telling Adam that you're not training. On a message, Adam, like, you fucking, you would, bro. So I didn't
and
go.
And was the bonfire, how substantial was said bonfire?
Look, it was okay. So that's the question I had. I was like, this better be the biggest.
Like, it better be. I mean, if this isn't just shitty little campfire, I mean.
That's my point. That's what I was asking. The amount of, like, sticks and shit that they had, most of it was green. So I'm like, oh, well, that's a recipe for disaster. It's not going to burn. It's going to be smoky, right? Like, it's going to be dog shit. And then whoever was running it lit, like, the smallest section of one corner. And then as we were walking up, I was like, oh, this bonfire is no good. And, you know, Julia was like, no. Like, it just got lit. It's going to burn out. I'm like, no, it won't. And then we stand there for an hour. And I swear to God, like, no progression was made in the fire. It was the most underwhelming bonfire.
Oh, really? I thought that story was going to go another direction. I thought you were going to say, then it just went woof. Because you would kind of think it's like, hey, if this is some culturally significant Scandinavian Swedish holiday thing, you would think that, I don't know,
it'd be
kind
good.
Of like, they would have the lighting of the bonfire for the bonfire festival down pat.
They should have at least lit all sides of it. They lit one corner and it was like slowly moving in like a very underwhelming wave through the green bushes. Like it was.
Oh, that's terrible. Anyway,
terrible. So bad, dude. Okay. It was cold so as then, fuck. And I was like, dude, can we go? Like, what is this?
So did you get to train then a different day? Or no, you haven't trained?
I trained on Monday. So we're recording this on a Wednesday. I trained 2 days ago at the closer gym. It was really awkward because it was the public holiday. The Monday was the public holiday. So I rock up. There's a sign on the door saying like judo was canceled. I'm like, well, I'm here to do jiu-jitsu. No one was in the foyer. There's a code to get in. I didn't know the code. So I like walk up the fire escape, knock on the door, and there's a kid's class running, right? And this little kid pokes his head like in the window, sees me, and he's like, ugh, like, why is he in the fire escape? And I'm like, what the hell? And then like this blue belt chick comes and opens the door. Is like, it's talking to me in Swedish. I'm like, oh yeah, I can't get in there. The door's locked. She tells me the code. I rock up. I'm standing around for half an hour. I hadn't joined the gym. I haven't signed any waivers. I hadn't paid insurance. I'm sort of just standing around and they're like, oh yeah, you can train, but we don't have any spare gis because I still don't have a gi. Listen to the last episode if you want to know why. And
he
so
threw
I put
it in
on,
the bin.
Threw it in the bin at the airport. So I put on
shit.
Like, so they had this gi on, they had like this gi jacket sitting on a chair. It looked clean. I was like, I'll just wear that. So it was like a spare
some dude's gi or you
no, it was like some like the school's like some spare gi. It was an A2, so I was like, perfect, I'm an A2. It was really like, it's really old, it's and like really crumpled and stuff, and I'm like, oh fuck it, I put that on. It was really short because it's shrunk in the dryer or whatever, so it like comes halfway down my arm. And then I'm rummaging around in their storeroom for some pants. They don't really have like spare gis. It's not something they have. And I find these like A4 white pants. So I got a blue shriveled up jacket and these huge like parachute pants. And I'm like tying them up as tight as I can. I'm like, put my belt on, walking out like with a mismatched fucking lame ass gear. And I'm like, oh, I'm here to train. I didn't tell anyone I was coming. I haven't paid for anything, but I'm here. and like
and
the black
how
belt
was
wasn't
that,
even
were
there because he was sick.
Were there, who you have met before from last time you were over there, right?
Yeah, I've met.
Did you recognize anyone else there, or were there many people to train it being a holiday? Or
There was surprisingly a decent amount of people. The class was like probably maybe 12, 15, probably about 15.
Yeah, sweet.
So it was a decent class. Like I met some people that I've rolled with before. The guy that was running the gym, the purple belt, I've rolled with him before. And he remembered me because it wasn't that long ago. It was about 2 years ago. And yeah, so decent training. But my dumb ass thought it was only a 60-minute class. So I told, because I got a lift, I hadn't had a car yet, and I asked my, you know, my partner's parents to like pick me up in an hour. They rock up to pick me up, and the class is still going. I'm like, oh, are we wrapping this up or what? And they're like, yeah, it's 90 minutes. So I'm the dickhead that rocks up, didn't tell anyone he was coming, hasn't paid for anything, hasn't signed anything, stole stole a random mismatched gi I found in the storeroom. Didn't really
costed
ask.
A kid. costed a kid on the fire escape.
Costed a child on the fire escape. And then I leave half hour early, like, get your fuckers.
And you said you accidentally, like, and you hurt someone's arm too. You said,
oh yeah, because okay. So what happened was,
story's getting worse and worse for you.
So what happened was I was passing. I think I was over under passing, right? Pressure passing, and I could feel he's going for a baseball bat choke. Yeah, I could feel it. I felt his grips. They were tight, but you know, I was like, eh, fuck it. I'll just frame on him. So I took the pass anyway. He put on the choke. And I just framed up on him. Like, I just put my knee on his on his neck or something, just sat up, and he couldn't finish it, right? Because he's too extended. And then because his arms were so extended, I was like, sweet, free armbar. I jumped
which
on
which is how
the
you
armbar.
Defend someone attacking a bow and arrow from the bottom. Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, 100%. So I just jumped on the armbar, and unbeknownst to me, that was his pre-existing. He had a pre-existing injury on that elbow. And because I jumped on it really quick, it scared the like shit out of him and like extended pretty quickly. I don't think it's super hurt, but I aggravated a pre-existing injury on this poor guy's elbow, so I felt really bad. So yeah, random
on the flip side, you probably learned
starts buddy cranking
probably resulted in you learning some new Swedish swear words, so I mean, silver lining.
Yeah, I know a few.
Yeah. All right. Well, and then it's Wednesday morning now for you. So I mean,
yeah.
Have you gotten a car yet or no?
Yeah, yeah. I bought a car yesterday, actually.
Nice. Yeah. So you're hopefully within the coming weeks finding a groove of a schedule of more consistent training.
Yeah. So at the moment, I think the best schedule is to do 4 days per week, and they're like 2 hour sessions. So they're not quite doubles. Like some of them are 2 hour sessions, like the no gi sessions are 2 hours. So it'll be two 2 hour no gi sessions and two 90 minute sessions per week. And one of the sessions will be at the larger gym, which is Farley. Yep. I just gave away my location.
Yeah, well, I look forward to you actually settling into your training.
Yeah, and there's a competition coming up in Stockholm that I'm probably going to try and do. I have to.
So I said to my,
Julia
I said
to let
my,
me do it.
Yeah, just tell her, just be like, word, and just go. I said to my students, I've been saying these the last couple of days. I said, oh guys, we've got a competition coming up on May 21st, and then right after that, we have a grading on May 26th. And yeah, those two things may or may not be connecting. And like, and one of the students goes like, I wonder if Chad, our Canadian friend, such a Chad, doesn't, I don't think he necessarily listens to the podcast, but anyway, if he does. So one of the other students asked me, will Chad be leveling up at the grading, which in Chad's case would mean getting his blue belt. Said, will Chad be leveling up at the grading? Don't worry, I won't tell anyone. And I just said, well, it depends. Is Chad doing the competition? That's all I said. So it's on you, Chad. We'll see, bro. We'll see.
No, he's not ready.
Anyway. Well, all right. All right.
He needs to level up his jiu-jitsu first, I reckon. Anyway,
but that's,
all right,
but so that's funny. Your comment is, okay, I know we're about to go into questions, but just that comment, I mean, reminds me of similar thoughts and perhaps even thoughts that I still have now of, you know, when I was going through the colored belts, you would, I don't know, like, for example, let me ask you this before I say what I was going to say. If let's say I gave you your purple belt before you moved to Sweden,
don't ask
and
me
right
this.
and right now you were wearing a purple belt,
yeah,
would you still have the same thoughts of, you know, oh no, Chad's not ready for a blue belt? So think about it, because what people tend to do is they kind of go, like, where you're currently sitting, there's a big gap between you and Chad, right? Let's imagine Chad got his blue belt today, right? There's a big gap.
Then yes,
but it's because Chad's at the beginning of blue belt, you're at the end. Okay. But so it's very easy to go, well, Chad's not ready for blue belt. Like, I'm a blue belt and Chad's not, you know. Whereas if you were not a purple belt, it'd be a bit more like, like Chad's ready for his blue belt. Like,
definitely.
You know what I mean? Like, there's a little bit of that, you know? And I guess it still sort of happens to me as well. I might look and go, there's layers to black belt, right? And there's obviously I've from day one on this podcast I've never advocated that I'm anything special. Like, I mean, I've said that I come from quite a good pedigree of jiu-jitsu, but you know, there would be other black belts that look at me and would say that I'm not a black belt. And of course I'm not making podiums at world championships and things like that, but you know, I still go, well, if I'm a black belt and I'll look at someone else, I'll see a brown belt get their black belt and I'm like, there's no way. Like I said, you're not even anywhere. Like, and maybe I have more authority to have that opinion, because if you're Gordon Ryan or Bushesha, or, you know, even, you know, one of those top 1%ers, Craig Jones, Kynan, whoever, those like 1-3%ers at the very top of jiu-jitsu, well, you know, 99.9% of people in the world aren't on your level. So you're almost a bit disconnected to have an opinion of like, well, you're, if you know what I mean. Whereas me, I can be like, well, I'm a shithouse nobody and you're nowhere near my level. So what are you doing with a black belt? Like, because I'm terrible. So I don't know. There's a bit of a, but you know what I mean?
I have to agree. Yeah.
So 100%. if you were wearing a purple belt or a brown belt, you'd probably be like,
you get a blue belt. You get a blue belt.
You get a blue belt.
Hey, I'm here for the trial. You get a blue belt. Everyone gets a blue belt. Fuck them.
Yeah. All right. Anyway, so in classic fashion, how long we got? 17 minutes, and we got to the first question. But
that's right. It was all
jiu-jitsu related. So let's go into the first question of the episode 140 Q&A.
First question is from Josh.
Hey, good afternoon. My name is Josh. Just wanted to say that I really enjoy the podcast. Like all the theory craft stuff, positional stuff, news, and occasional beyond jiu-jitsu weird tangents.
Occasional.
Feel like the podcast has helped me overcome some major plateaus, and the content you guys are putting out really prevents burnout, so thanks. Quick about me, I'm ultra heavyweight. Been training jiu-jitsu on and off for about 13 years. Altogether, mat time, about 4 years. 5'8", 240 pounds. Trying to find out if there's anything that I can do to make more people want to roll with me, especially upper belts. Being a big guy can be hard to find training partners. Almost always start on bottom, and I've been told that I have a tactical style. I try not to smash, and I'm not overly competitive. Question today is, what makes the two of you like different people's rolling styles? And is there anything that I can do to make specifically upper belts want to pick me out to roll with? All right, thanks.
Josh, man, thanks for the question, and thanks for all the kind words of the podcast. Much, much appreciated. I guess maybe I'm probably best equipped to answer this. You know, you're 240 pounds. I would probably be at the moment 230 pounds, you know, so which is, for everyone else, 240 is just shy of 110 kilos, 230 pounds, 105 kilos. So, you know, me and Josh both over 100 kgs. When I used to compete, in my prime, I would compete at 88 kilos, which is, you know, 194 pounds. But yeah, so it's a tough one, man, because realistically, I don't have really a solvable answer for you. When you're on like the extremes of the spectrum of size and weight or whatever, you'll always struggle to find people your size to roll with you, and as a result you'll typically all find people who then don't want to roll with you. So even if you're on the other extreme, so we've got a girl at the gym who would weigh, geez, she weighs like, she's tiny, even for a girl, like 50 kilos or something like that, like super small. So, you know, even the other girls have got, you know, 10, 15, 20 kilos on her. She never has someone her size to train with. And so as a result as well, a lot of bigger people don't want to roll with her. Like, and she's happy to roll with, she'll roll with someone your size, Josh. She'll happily roll with someone 200 plus pounds, as long as, you know, they're not some ass wipe who's going to injure her. But so it's not about that, but it's that a bigger person will be like, I don't really get a lot out of this. You know, it's not a waste of my time because you can always be learning something. So when you're bigger as well, it's the same thing. Like, I'm quite tall, I'm 6'4", and I would really never have people my weight, or I would have people my weight, but never people my height to train with. And you know, but luckily enough for me, I came from such a high level competitive gym that while I was there, it had the current, you know, heavyweight and super heavyweight world champions in the gym, in like Bernardo Faria and Leo Nogueira. So they were my weight and black belts and world champions. And I was just a blue purple belt or whatever. In terms of trying to, yeah, I don't know, man. Unfortunately, Josh, I don't really have a great answer. Like, it's a bit shit for them not to roll with you though, just because you're a big guy, you know. And it's hard to know without more information. Like, I've got students in my own gym that will avoid rolling with certain people, and without being super polite about it, it's essentially just because that person who doesn't roll and want to roll with said person is being a little bitch, right? Like, and you get all sorts of people in jiu-jitsu gyms, some people who are happy to go to war and some people who really don't. You get some people who won't want to roll with a certain person because that person might be the nicest, most genuine person in the gym, but they might also be a spaz who injures everyone. So, you know, but let's say giving you the benefit of the doubt, Josh, and just let's just say, like you said, you try not to smash people and try not to use your size and weight to inflict, you know, mass damage to the battlefield, then we, you know, without seeing it firsthand, it sounds like all the other people are just being little bitches, you know. Yeah, unfortunately, I don't have a, without coming up with some crazy game plan of trying to manipulate them into training with you. Like, you know, I'm not going to go down a rabbit hole of being like, oh, well, it's, you know, psychologically proven that if you ask people for help and questions and their advice, they instantly like you more. And then maybe you could, you know, start rolling with them and essentially let them beat the shit out of you for a while to coax them into building a rapport. And then you, over time, you turn it up. Okay. But I mean, like, fuck. I mean, it's ridiculous to even have that conversation. I mean, use that advice if you want, but you know what I mean?
That's not a bad idea. Yeah. That could work.
But yeah, on to your next question, which is more directed to the both of us. What makes you enjoy rolling with different people and different body types and whatever? For me, it's just particularly, it's solving that particular puzzle, or not even solving that particular puzzle, but it's just the variation in itself. Like, if I were to draw a parallel with, you know, a video game, or not even a video game, like a motorbike racer or a car racer or something, like, oh, what makes you enjoy racing different tracks, or you know, different circuits or whatever. You know, or when you're playing a video game, what makes you enjoy playing a different character over the other character? What makes you enjoy, you know, this hole on a golf course and also enjoy the other hole on the golf course? It's just the variation in itself, you know. And when you have training partners who you train with all the time, and so you, like, in little air quotes, know their game, right? It's kind of like knowing that racetrack or whatever, and you're trying to go fast around that particular track, like the, you know. And so I'll roll with particular students who, for example, there's this one blue belt old guy that Kieran would go to war to all the time, Toby. And Toby's a blue belt, super tough, super aggressive, not as in a like malicious way, just his very aggressive jiu-jitsu style. And even me as a black belt, I was like, oh, I I would set myself a goal with Toby, knowing his style, his jiu-jitsu, the way he moves and everything he does. I was like, okay, in the 1 5-minute roll, I'm going to like take him down, pass his guard and submit him. And those three things in isolation aren't particularly difficult for me as a black belt with Toby, but they can be quite challenging to put into 1 5-minute roll with Toby, right? Mm. You know, with other people, it'll be, you know, okay, maybe on Toby I can, in my sleep, do a leg entanglement and heel hook him. But with another person, it's very difficult to even enter into their legs. So that'll be the particular, like, that'll be my objective or goal with that particular person. So it's a different challenge. It's a different, you know, every partner is a different racetrack, and every game, you know, everything that they do is a different corner on that racetrack that I can, this time I'm on this track, I'm going to try a different line. I'm going to try break a little bit later. I'm going to try do this or whatever, you know. It's just the variation in itself that I find enjoyable, rolling with different people and different body types. Mm. I don't know if you had a different answer for that, Kieran, but.
Yeah, I do. I don't like rolling. Next question.
Next.
No, I think you answered that really well. I think for me, just on the whole big guy, little guy thing, I like going with bigger guys because when I go with people my own weight, it seems easier.
No, that sounds silly. Yeah, that's true. And it's something I've never got to experience, right? Like every time I go compete, I'm almost like shocked at how big dudes are, because I'm like, holy fuck, because I never get to train consistently with people that size. So even when I roll with Eric's a guy in the gym who is more or less the exact same height as me, same age as me. Eric's a blue belt, but he's stronger than me and probably fitter than me. He's an ex-professional basketball player. He's incredibly athletic and everything, and you know, but yeah, Eric's essentially my size and weight, maybe a little bit lighter than me because he's leaner.
A little bit.
Essentially my size and weight. And when I do stand up with Eric, I'm like, fuck man, this dude's like so hard to take down. But if I look at a photo or if someone photos or videos me rolling with Eric, I'm like, we're the exact same size, you know? Yep. It's like, or I'll be rolling with Chad, right? Chad's 88 kilos, 90 kilos or whatever it is.
About 90,
So he's lighter than me, he's shorter than me, thicker than me. And I'm like, fuck, man, Chad's massive. And then I look at photos and videos, I'm like, I'm towering over bigger. Chad, right?
Yeah.
So
you're way bigger.
Yeah, so I never get to experience that kind of, you know, oh, well, I always train with bigger people than me. So then when I go, you know, compete, everyone feels easy.
Yeah. Well, it is true. When you train with people that are heavier and then you go with someone that is maybe only a little bit heavier than you or the same weight as you or, God forbid, lighter than you, it's like, this is fine. I can deal with this. And it also helps if you do compete regularly to train with bigger dudes, because when you get that massive dude across from you in competition in absolute division, you're not scared. You're not like, oh my God, he's so big. You're like, yeah, I can take him. Let's hit his leg or something. You know what I mean? So it's a confidence boost. But thanks for the question, Josh. Let's go into the next question from Sergio.
Hey guys, this is Sergio from Spain. Got a question for you. So I'm 48, I'm a white belt, 2 stripes. And the thing is that next competition, well, actually it happened in the last competition too, how this is divided is beginner, intermediate, experienced. And for my age, there is another category, which is basically seniors or something like that. That is not divided by belt. So I have to go either with white belts that are like in their 20s or experienced people my age that are usually very high belts. So what would you do? Because last time I competed in the white belt category, well, in the beginners category, it didn't go bad. I won 3 matches, I lost 3 matches, but I don't know what should I do for the next one, because there were people in their 20s, very explosive. You know, I'm pretty fit, but 48 years old is not a joke. All right, guys, thank you. I always listen to your podcast. I love it. Bye.
Sergio, my man. All right.
Yeah, thanks for the question, Sergio. Yep, go for it.
Jump in there with TRT. The young bucks, mate.
Oh, we had different answers.
No, I'd say, honestly, jump in with the Young Bucks. If you went in last comp and you won three, that's, man, in most brackets, maybe not a white belt, but a lot of brackets, that'll get you to at least the semifinals, you know what I mean? So I'd say bloody go for it, man. Play your jiu-jitsu game, rip in, because I think if you go into an open belt masters division, yeah, you could be going up against black belts, purple belts, brown belts. You're not really going to get the competition experience if you're just getting like absolutely, you know, outplayed by someone with, you know, 5+ years of experience. You're a 2-stripe white belt. I'd say go in with the young fellas and give it your best, and you'll probably surprise them and yourself.
Yeah, that's a tough one. I feel like the competition format is very skewed towards fuck Sergio. It's not really a great format. I'm guessing it's like that because of lack of numbers, I assume. Yeah. Perhaps. Yeah, I guess I would tend to agree with Kieran, because, you know, regardless of the age at white belt and even at blue belt to some degree, regardless of the age, you're going to get a lot of spazziness and people dumping all their energy in the first 30 seconds and a lot of gassing out and a lot of people not knowing how to take each other down and whatever. So, like, that's kind of going to be across the board at white belt, regardless of the age. Of course, the physical factor is not something to completely ignore. I mean, 48, I mean, I'm 37 and I can feel the difference between, I can physically feel the difference in me to when I, you know, trained and competed as a 20-year-old, but I also feel it like rolling with 20-year-olds, even if they're a blue belt and I'm a black belt, they can be a 20-year-old half my weight. And I'm just like, bro, you just don't slow down. Fucking chill out. It's quite funny, actually. I don't know if I mentioned this, but when you and I had our last roll before you moved.
I was trying to murder you, bro. I was trying to kill you.
And you came out hard. And it was no-gi as well. And you came out hard. And I remember, because I haven't trained consistently. This is not an excuse. Like, this is also just your fitness.
Sounds like an excuse.
But I haven't trained consistently for almost 18 months now with this ongoing knee surgery thing, waiting for another surgery, whatever. And I remember, like, after the first minute of that round, I remember having this internal conversation where I was like, uh-oh, if Kieran keeps up this pace, I'm going to struggle. And I remember, and then I think you shot another double and I sprawled super hard.
So hard.
That failed shot, which was nicely timed and everything. Like, it was but I think the fact that you had already set the intensity that I was prepared for a hard sprawl. Like, if you had shot that double at the start, you probably would have made it, right? And
I've
kind of broke you a little bit. And then I was the pace slowed down.
Man, because I was coming at you so hard. And you fucking, I even mentioned it to you afterwards. Like, I've never felt anyone sprawl that fucking hard. I pancaked.
I
didn't even get the turtle. I fully pancaked.
But remember, you would have done these drills with him before. And sorry, Sergio, we're slightly going a little bit off topic, but yeah, the age factor is real. But you would have done these drills with me before, Kieran, where I try to simulate and try to limit the variability to force people to shoot hard, because the only way you learn how to sprawl hard, if you don't come from a wrestler, is someone shooting hard. And obviously this is like, wrestlers would be like, yeah, no fucking shit, right? But you know, the average jiu-jitsu person, maybe not American jiu-jitsu people who train jiu-jitsu in America, because so many of them wrestled in school, even if it wasn't in college, they did it in school. So, but for the average jiu-jitsu person, especially in Australia where we have next to no wrestling and whatever, you know, you have to teach them to shoot hard. And the only way you learn to sprawl hard, and by hard, I just mean really quickly and explosively, is when someone shoots hard. So your shot was like 200% commitment, right? Which required a 200% commitment sprawl. But yeah, on the flip side, Sergio, I guess, I mean, yeah, as a whole, I would agree with Kieran, just jump in with the other white belts. The own, you know, but if I were to give one bit of advice for leaning the other way, it would be, well, it just depends. What are the rule sets like? So it's combined, but then is it also essentially black belt rules, like wrist locks, toe holds, knee bars, you know, jumping guard? Is all this on the cards? Is it no gi? Is there heel hooks, leg entanglements? Is that all everyone together division? Is it like, what are the rule set? If, because then that also can help you make the decision. Like if it was essentially black belt rules, then I don't think you have any business going. And I don't think that's fair that they should expect, you know, oh, but you're the same age. Like, yeah, but I'm a fucking white belt. And that dude's a black belt who's got 30 years of jiu-jitsu experience. Like that's not fair. It's, you know, it's also just not safe, right? Like what if it is that case and the guy has you in a toe hold or something and you roll the wrong way because you don't have the experience of those positions and submissions and you rip your own knee apart. Like that's not fair. It's not safe. But, you know, perhaps if the rules are limited to more of a novice rule set, then maybe you could go that way too. This is me playing devil's advocate. Otherwise, I would agree with Kieran's initial answer, which would be, yeah, the young guys will, you know, be fitter, stronger and whatnot, but at least you're on the same level of, this is, I don't mean to, the same level of kind of like experience level, you know, so that even the fittest 20-year-old white belt, unless he's super experienced at competing and it's like his 20th comp as a white belt, he's probably going to gas out anyway, you know, so just
ride
jump
the wave.
In. Yep.
All right.
Thanks for the question, Sergio. On to the next.
Is from Keith.
Hey, guys. It's Keith from Canada. Just a little old white belt here. First, want to start off giving you guys your flowers for hosting both an entertaining and informative podcast. Super rare to find those these days. So thanks for all the time and energy that you've put in to create something that I enjoy listening to, and I'm sure so do many others. Now, this question is more for Kieran. And, you know, I wouldn't mind if Adam threw an analogy in there for me too. So if Adam can sneak one in, that'd be great as well. But I'm sitting at the top of my weight class, 220 pounds, and I'm not exactly where I want to be for strength. So I do want to cut some body fat and add some muscle back there, but not go over 220 pounds because I don't want to be in competition with guys who are like 300, because the weight category here, as soon as you pass 220, you're pretty much in unlimited. So for any sort of tips, I used to wrestle in high school, so I know a little bit about cutting weight, but just to sort of replace that fat with muscle and not go over my weight category. And I'm like right at 220 right now. Anyways, thanks guys. Keep it up. And looking forward to your answer. Cheers.
Keith from Canada.
Good question. Keith from Canada. Do you know Chad?
Of course he does.
I used to get that when I was in, you know, in Brazil. You're from Australia. Do you know so and so?
Oh, it's I get it whenever I say, like, whenever I used to tell people I was in the Navy.
I have a little anecdote, sorry, to tell you that sorry, Keith, your question's off the cards. We've moved on. No, we're coming back, Keith. But I was at the competition on the weekend and a guy came up to me. He's from a different gym in the area. And like, you know, I see him all the time. We had already run into each other at the comp. But anyway, as I'm walking past him again, he comes up to me. He's like, Adam, it's like, bro, it's like my friend Hafa from Brazil just moved over. He said he knows you. And I was like, no way. And he's like, yeah. He said that you guys fought at the Paulista competition in São Paulo. And that's like the local state competition. But it's like a big, you know, the state of São Paulo is 35 million people. So like, you know, it's a big competition. This is the competition circuit that like you would always see the Miao brothers at, Merigali would always be at. Like this is the circuit that all these guys would do when they're coming up through the belts. Anyway, so I go over to him and like, I don't recognize him. I'm like, hey, Hafa, man, well, you know, essentially nice to meet you because I don't recognize him. He's like, bro, I remember you. And he pulled out his phone and he had like old photos from the competition of me and him fighting as blue belts. And I didn't ask him to send them to me in the moment because I was actually just leaving the comp. And I was like, And I was like, oh, six. Oh, man, I don't remember. I was like, what happened? Like, who won? And he was like, oh, you won, bro. That was the competition that then paid your flights to America to fight the Pants. He's like, I was your first match. And I remember that competition. I don't remember that first match very well, but the next two were a bit more significant because of they were opponents I had lost to in the past. But yeah, anyway, yeah. It was just really, you know, it was a bit of a, well, I actually do know that person.
That's crazy.
Yeah. Anyway, Keith from Canada. I've had that
before.
Sorry, Keith. I put it back on the table. Kieran's taking it off again.
So my last name is Lefebvre. And it literally translates in French to Smith. So it means the Smith. So it's kind of like the equivalent as being called Smith in a Western country. So it's incredibly common, right? But in Australia and outside of like, you know, French speaking places, the last name Lefebvre isn't as common. So I get it all the time when people see my name and like, oh, you must be related to my doctor. His name's Lefebvre or something like that. I'm like, man, like, come on, there's millions and millions of Lefebvres around the world. Like, it's super, super common. So I was at the doctor's and I was booking like an appointment or whatever. And this guy goes, oh, Lefebvre. Oh, do you have any cousins in Sydney by chance? Like, I live in the same building as a Lefebvre. Are you related to him or something? And I'm like, oh, you know, I started to explain like, yeah, it means Smith. It's really common. And he's like, oh yeah, his name's Jesse. I'm like, oh fuck, that is my cousin. Yeah, so it was my fucking cousin. He showed me a photo. I'm like, oh yeah, that's my cousin.
my brother's name's David. And, you know, obviously our last name is Childs, Childs, like if someone didn't know what the plural for child was. So our surname's Childs. And he had at our school in the same year as him, a guy's name, and it was David Child without the S. And they weren't, they weren't like friends. Like we were in like not a massive school, but like, you know, enough kids in the year that they weren't friends or anything. And they spent their entire high school years both getting in shit for what the other person did. Because whenever my brother got in shit for something he did, he was like, no, it's David Child. And then whenever David Child got in shit for something, he was always like, no, it's that other. It's David Childs with an S. So they spent their whole high school just getting it, not intentionally, just trying to save their own skin, right? But it would obviously.
That could have worked out for them, like, because it got too confusing and then they're like, oh, fuck it. No worries about
it. Keith.
Back to Keith's question. So basically the crux of his question is he wants to get stronger, but he doesn't want to put on just muscle and go above his 220 weight class. And he wants to, in his words, replace the muscle with fat. Now, you can't turn fat into muscle. That is like an old wives' tale that is not based in any science and doesn't make any sense. So if that's what you're thinking, like replacing, like literally turning the fat into muscle or the muscle into fat, doesn't work that way. It's illogical.
Fat's fat, right? Muscle's muscle.
Exactly. So now I would say if you start weight training, yes, you're going to put on muscle. And yes, we all know that muscle weighs more than fat. But in the very nature of you increasing your training schedule, so long as you don't increase your calories to accompany that, you will go through body recomposition, which is what you're describing, where you will burn fat and gain muscle. Now, they're not going to be on the equivalent scale. It's not like you're going to burn 1 gram of fat for every 1 gram of muscle that you put on. What you'll find is that you'll end up burning more fat than the muscle and your weight will pretty much stay the same, if not reduce, but you'll have better body composition. And that's generally in my experience what I find with most people, unless, of course, I put them on a calorie surplus and I get them to increase their calories. Now, you need to be eating close to your body maintenance to put on muscle, your calorie maintenance to put on muscle, because when you're looking to gain muscle, it's very taxing for your body to gain muscle, right? To build, to go through muscle protein synthesis, repair and build muscle. So you'll need to, what I'm trying to say is very hard to be on very low calories, but still put on muscle at the same time. It can be done, but generally it's shown in studies to be done in untrained populations, meaning people that don't have any experience training. That's when it can happen for those people. But when we're talking about strength, we don't necessarily need to put on a significant amount of muscle to get you stronger. What we've seen in studies is you can, and this is in trained population preparing for jiu-jitsu competitions, you will find that you can gain strength in only 4 weeks out from a comp. And so basically,
sounds like an infomercial, Kieran.
No, I use this as a case. I use this as a case study to try and convince people that like 4 weeks out for your comp isn't like, it's not what people probably think. Oh, it's like, oh, it's too close. There's, you know, I need months and months to put, you know, get stronger and put on size. Yeah, you need months and months to put on muscle size, but you don't need all that long to get a neurological response to your strength training and get stronger. Because what you'll find is you will be stronger because you don't necessarily need to put on significant muscle to get stronger. It's a neurological response. It's your body recruiting more muscle units to move your muscle. What I'm trying to say is you can get stronger without having to get bigger.
Yeah, and a very no analogies have come to mind, Keith. Kieran spoke for too long. I zoned out. Right. You get think even if you've gone a long period of time without doing any sort of strength training, and then you go back to it, like sometimes I don't know whatever it would be like. In a week, you'll feel stronger. You have that sort of, you know, like exactly like you said, like that neurological reminding your body and your muscles that, hey, remember, you're supposed to do shit. Like, remember how I'm, you know, and I guess that's what you're saying. It's like that neurological, what do you call it? Like the neurological side of it where your body's recruiting more muscle or whatever.
Yes.
You know, it's like the... It's like a strength equivalent of when you do little physio exercises just to kind of activate something before you go off and, you know, train or whatnot. So you can definitely like feel stronger and be stronger in that 4 weeks, right? And it completely makes sense when you think about the scientific side behind it.
Yeah. But long term, I would say if you're interested in body recomposition, reducing fat and increasing muscle, I'd recommend going on a calorie deficit for about a 12-week period is optimal. So spend about 3 months dieting, being on a slight calorie deficit, increase your strength training, make sure that your protein is at least about 2 grams per kilogram of lean muscle mass, or lean body mass, I should say, LBM. And give that a go. If you want help with that, hit me up. But I think that should get you started. I wouldn't worry about cutting in terms of water weight, like you mentioned with your wrestling experience. But this is more long-term body recomposition.
We're going to go into as well. I believe it'll either be episode 141. So it could be the next episode or episode 142 perhaps. We're going to do an episode that will... to some degree be this topic more in depth, which will be, I don't know, labeled something along the lines of weight cutting mistakes or weight cutting or making weight. And obviously this is off of one of my students not making weight at a recent competition. So, you know, we're going to talk about correct ways to make weight, what he did to try make weight, why it didn't work and stuff like that. But that'll obviously flesh out into talking about, you know, topics like this in, you know, strength training and all the stuff that goes with it. So we'll have literally the next episode or the one after that will be right up your alley as well, Keith. It'll be way more information on this sort of topic, a whole episode on it.
Adam won't even be here. It'll just be me.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. I'm just going to be sitting here. Yeah, look over and this will be me while Kieran's.
Usually when I'm talking. All right. Next question is from our boy, the OG, Nicholas P.
Let's go, Nick.
Morning, fellas. Hope the move's going well, Kieran. I just had a question for you, Adam. As I've just relocated cities and the new gym I've found teaches almost exclusively ecological teaching styles, which I know you two had a good chat about recently. I wanted to hear your thoughts, both of your thoughts, on the lack of safety actually involved with the type of training. As I've, in my couple of days here, I've already seen some white belt savagery between a bit of neck cranking and spiking, stacking, and knee reaping. And I know, Kieran, you've just had this course with Jordan in this area, so I thought this would be a bit topical and interesting. Cheers, guys, and I would absolutely smash you, Kieran.
What a legend.
Oh, so unfortunately, it's still hilarious, but I listened to that in preparation for this episode, and I fucking lost it. Because it's like, thanks, guys, and I'll absolutely smash you, Kieran.
Oh, man.
Oh, love you, Nick. Nice. Oh,
so are we awesome. I don't understand. Are we recording right now or no? I don't understand what's happening.
Yes, bro.
Okay.
Yes, bro.
That is, I wasn't sure. So sorry, people. We had some technical difficulties going on. My dog started barking. Shit was so, I lost track. That's absolutely hilarious, Nick P. So, man, as you sent that question, I can answer it with, this would be the perfect time to have like a reel or a Instagram clip thing, because the first thing that came to my mind was that meme that, like, when you said, oh, and what should I do? And my head instantly went to that meme that's like a meme or clip or reel that people do where it just has a guy go, run. And then it's just like, that's my answer, bro. Get the fuck out of there. I think it's ridiculous. Like my serious answer is, okay, you've relocated cities. My serious answer is don't train there. Like find a different gym. I think it's such a backwards way to try to teach jiu-jitsu. For people who haven't listened to our episode on ecological teaching, I'm not going to spend another 50 minutes sharing my opinion on it. I mean, I could, but it's just essentially regurgitating the same stuff I've already said. Ecological teaching is just a fancy name for specific training, and it doesn't only have a place in jiu-jitsu, it has a fundamental pillar in jiu-jitsu in specific training, right? I'm not saying ecological training has a fundamental pillar. I'm saying specific training does. Stop renaming shit that already exists, okay? But these people who are taking it to a level of exclusively teaching through ecological teaching is just, it may as well just be a marketing thing to try to, you know, how many cliche expressions do we need to use? Like, you know, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, you don't need to reinvent the wheel or whatever. Like it's just silly. And in terms of the safety aspect of it, yeah. So for those who don't know a lot about ecological teaching, it's supposed to be this better way to teach because people learn in a more real way as how things happen, blah, blah, blah. And people figure it out on themselves because they're put in the real, you know. No, they don't, right? Otherwise, you know, it's just also just disrespecting years and years and years and years of perfection of an art. And, you know, what we are currently doing today in jiu-jitsu is built off of the backs of what people like Hodja Gracie and Marcelo Garcia and what people before their time, what they were doing, and, you know, what legends like, you know, the entire Gracie family were doing. All of what we do today is built off the shoulders of those legendary jiu-jitsu practitioners, instructors, athletes, competitors. And yeah, like people don't figure it out by themselves. People figure out new jiu-jitsu techniques and stuff, but these are people who are already competent, you know, black belts. Like to think that a couple of white belts are going to figure out a false reap invert into the saddle on their own when the best black belts on the fucking planet only figured it out 12 months ago is just the most flawed logic ever, you know? And yeah, imagine saying to someone, we probably mentioned this in the ecological episode, imagine saying to getting two white belts, and this is how, in a nutshell, ecological teaching happens, and things are supposed, you know, so they'll say something like, you know, they'll put you in half guard and they'll give you a goal and they'll say your objective is to get head control, you know, and flatten them out, or your objective is to get your the knee of your leg that's trapped in half guard to either side of their hip, and people organically figure out how to do a knee cut or how to pass to mount, whatever. So yeah, let's put two white belts in 50-50 and say your objective is to control your opponent's heel and rotate it, and let's see how safely white belts develop and understand how to heel hook each other. Dumb. So my short answer is this, Nick P, get a different gym. If that's not, no, I'm not joking, bro. It's just stupid. Imagine if you're, here we go. I don't think I've done an analogy all episode. It's just stupid. Like, imagine if you were going to culinary school and you wanted to become a chef, and all of a sudden you've moved cities and the culinary school you're going to insists on everything being cooked in a, like, deep fried. You'd be like, but I want to make or sorbet. Deep fry it, bitch. But I want to. It's just it's just stupid. It just is so backwards. Makes no sense. Find a different gym. If that's not a possibility because the city you've moved to doesn't have another gym, and this is the only place you can train, and the people are really lovely, and a lot of the other things that are important in choosing a jiu-jitsu gym, you know, how much does it cost? The logistics. How far away is it? Are the people nice? Are the training partners nice? Does the instructor seem invested in your development as an individual? Blah, blah, blah. Maybe all that's well and good. And then, I don't know, man. Like, we've already met before, Nick. I know you're not a brand new white belt. You know enough to have a better understanding of safety. And all I could say is you can't look after everyone in the gym, right, while class is happening, but look after yourself when you're training and rolling, and look after your training partner, and be a little bit more diligent with your safety practices. You know, tap early, tap often, as they say, you know, but yeah, I'm not a fan, man. I'm even upset that you're going through this right now. That's my answer.
I don't think it. See, the thing and I yeah, have with psychological. Karen. the thing I have with the ecological teaching, and on the back of the episode that we've done from it, it's clear to me that I think we have a decent understanding of it, but I don't think we fully understand how a lot of these gyms implement it. We had a guy that was I know he meant well, but it kind of came off backhanded. He sent us this long message about, hey, just listen to your ecological episode. It's clear that you guys, you know, maybe missing some understanding of how it's implemented, etc. I'm willing to jump on and have a chat with you about it, but I don't want to come on the podcast and I don't want it to be recorded. And it's kind of like, well, thanks for reaching out. Thanks for volunteering your time to, you know, clarify some things. But if it's not going to be on the episode, like, we're not going to do it. No offense.
Yeah. And look, we had someone as well comment on the episode essentially saying this entire episode was two people who don't understand something talking about.
Trying to debunk something
they don't understand. And while I don't disagree that we don't understand it as well as some other people, I've also looked into it substantially. You know, did I do my thesis on it? No. Right. But I've also listened to multiple podcast episodes where, you know, guys like Greg Saunders, who's, from what I understand, the leading or most famous guy who's advocating for it. And I hear him talking to other black belts, and after an hour of explaining ecological teaching to an existing black belt, that existing black belt is still sitting there going, what the fuck are you talking about? You know, and I find it hard to believe it's because that black belt has a fundamental misunderstanding of jiu-jitsu, and he's so ingrained in the wrong that he can't see the light in ecological. I think that's just such a bullshit.
It's almost like pseudoscience. It's almost like pseudoscience.
Pseudoscience.
In some, like, you know, in new products or new methodologies or new almost like cult movements, pseudoscience. You see this in nutrition all the time. You see it in exercise physiology and exercise science and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. That some new wave will come out where someone's making money off it or someone is staking their reputation on it. And the they explain it in such a way that is so complex, convoluted, using jargon, buzzwords, key phrases, and that may be ingrained in some form of science backing, but they sort of overcomplicate it, and it leaves someone feeling so confused that they're almost embarrassed to be like, I still don't get it, you know, like as though they're going to come off stupid. That's how it's sort of, that's the vibe I'm getting from this ecological teaching. But I will say, not that anyone that is in the ecological space would probably listen to this, but if someone sends this to them, this is an open offer that anyone who runs their gym or is a, I want to put some like parameters here. You have to either run a gym or be a head coach of a gym or a coach of a gym that does almost exclusively ecological training. That you understand it or whatever. And if you want to come on this podcast and explain it to us and have your case, it will be, it's not going to be like an argument, but it will be more of a back and forth that you have to, you know, cop some difficult questions. If you want to do that, I think that we're definitely willing to host that conversation about it. So we can understand it more. We can understand where you're coming from, and we can, you know, put some of these challenging questions and concerns that we have about the approach to you and see what solutions you have for them. And maybe at the end of that, we can be more informed about it and, you know, stop as some people criticizing, like smashing something that we supposedly do not understand.
Because then at least if we understand it, we've got the credentials to say that's fucking stupid. And
whoa. We're not going to come in with hostility, but you know, obviously I'm not going to host and we're not going to publish an episode that if it, you know, goes to shit. And I think we're, you know, we have enough civility to, you know, call a spade, call it out. But also let someone speak and not, you know, be rude about it or whatever. So
dude comes on, it's not even you and me. We've just got him sitting across from Piers Morgan. It's just like turned into this argumentative shit show.
Yeah. So why do you want children to die? Why are you murdering kids with your, yeah, that's what Piers's approach is like. I mean, he's got some good one-liners, but fuck me.
Yeah. I don't know. Anyway, so we could keep talking about it. Something. Yeah. I mean, I would happily sit down, and I've spoken to another guy who's kind of drinking the Kool-Aid too of ecological, and it just, I don't know. Yeah. I mean, I would happily talk more in depth with someone, but my current understanding of it, and look, I've essentially done an ecological class taught an ecological class. But let me rephrase that. I've done a class that was nothing but specific training. I've also taught classes where we did nothing but specific training. But I've never been at a gym or taught at a gym where 100% of the classes were specific training
specific teaching. But it's like So what my understanding of it is they take that concept of specific training, but they apply that to teaching instead. Like, so instead of teaching a technique by step by step by step, they teach an idea and then say, go and figure it out. That's my understanding of how the ecological approach is. And it's in that, and their claim is it's in that process of going and figuring it out that you consolidate techniques, if you will. But the problem I have with it is when you speak to someone that is, as you put it, Adam, drinking the Kool-Aid of ecological teaching, they're like, oh, okay, so show us a technique. And they say something like, I don't do techniques. I do concepts. I don't teach techniques. I teach concepts. And then you're like, fucking what? Like, what are you doing then, bro? Like,
Also seems like me, it's like one of those things that, you know, kind of came about off of the back of someone's failure. And what I mean by that is potentially someone was like, okay, well, look at what, you know, I've got these 100 world champions standing in front of me, and they're all 100 of them are doing the same thing to achieve their black belt and win a world title. I've tried it and I didn't win a world title. So there must be a better way. And then they've kind of invented this bullshit, like a better way that is not better, right? Like, I mean, you know, I'm
now this is turning into a slandering campaign.
Yeah, I don't know. I'm just not on board with it. I don't want to see my boy Nick P training at a gym like that. But look, I'll sit and talk with someone about it. But if I think it's bullshit, I'll be saying it's bullshit and doesn't make sense. Like I watched a few reels of, you'll like this, Kieran. I watched a few Joe Rogan reels, and what it was an episode. I don't know if this is a current episode or a years old episode, but he's essentially the guy he has on the podcast is like an Aikido guy. And like, and no matter what this guy says, Joe Rogan just essentially like, no, bro, in no world does that work. Like, you know, and Joe's essentially saying your brain, like he doesn't get aggressive, but like essentially he's like, you're brainwashed, man. Like these guys have got you hook, line and sinker. Like none of what you're saying is correct or makes sense. And it's been proven in MMA, not just MMA, but like every single combat sport in the world. Like, oh, because what we do is so deadly that you can't know.
That excuse, man. Oh, we couldn't possibly do it in MMA. We'll murder everyone. We'll show us, bro.
Yeah, yeah.
We'll show us. Yeah. I'll sign the waiver. Come murder me. Like, kill me, bro.
Anyway,
use your chi to throw me.
That's enough. That's enough.
We're derailing.
Yeah, guys. So we're gonna leave it there. Sorry, excuse me. We did have a couple of other questions. Unfortunately, we didn't get to them. Like I just said, 15 minutes ago, off the back of that last question, we had a few little technical difficulties with the recording and the software, so that kind of derailed the episode a little bit. So we ran out of time. But here's what we're gonna do: we'll off air. Kieran and I will look at those two questions, and if they are time sensitive in the sense that maybe one of the questions is someone saying like, oh, I'm doing a competition at the end of the month, you know, this is my question, we'll answer it in the next episode. However, if they're just not generic questions, you know what I mean? But if they're timeless questions, time sensitive, then we'll grab them on the next episode.
Yeah. Yeah. Awesome. Well, if you made it this far, you're one of the very few that listen to the entire episode. So thank you so much. And if you did submit a question or you want to submit a question to the show, well, thank you for submitting your questions. And please check out the link in the description of this episode. You will find a link to a browser program called SpeakPipe, where from your phone, you'll be able to submit us an audio question. We only take audio questions these days. We've level upped. And as a bit of a call out, if you do listen to this podcast, you're a fan. Even if you don't listen to the YouTube version, I'd appreciate if you head over to YouTube and chuck us a subscribe. It's free and it helps us out significantly. So we'd appreciate that. And that's all I have. Over to you, Adam.
Yeah, guys, I got nothing. Kieran did the intro and the outro in the one episode. Bro, crushing it. Sweden's doing good things. Yeah, guys, that's it. That's it from me as well. Thank you so much for listening. As I mentioned, missed questions we will address either on the next episode or the next Q&A Ask a Black Belt. Thank you, everyone, for listening. You know where to find us. And we will catch you on the next one.